Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and time now for part three of our special series, Oscar on Mars. We're exploring the art of movie making by taking a look at one film, The Martian, and why it was nominated for seven different Academy Awards.
Prep emergency departure.
Commander?
We're scrubbed. That's an order.
Well, first of all, let me put this out there. Do we like The Martian? Yes. Do we think it's going to win on Sunday night? Who knows? But as with any complex human endeavor, it's been fascinating to see how all the pieces fit together to make something beautiful.
Yeah. How long can he survive decompression? Less than a minute.
On Monday, we talked about the visual effects wizardry that went into creating the Martian landscape.
It was done on a lot of green screen, but there were big landscapes that were done in the Jordan Desert that also had to be heavily manipulated with visual effects to make it work.
Martinez, how long before takeoff?
12 minutes.
Yesterday, screenplay and the delicate task of turning The Martian, the book, into The Martian, the movie.
You know, it's a 400-page book, and as it was a 2-hour and 20-minute movie, so you have to make tough choices. As a screener, you're going to have a producer over your shoulder saying, we only have X number of dollars. If you cut out that long voyage, will your story still sing?
Well, today we're going to talk about sound mixing and sound editing with Brian McKeever, senior audio post-production mixer at Soundtrack Boston.
Visibility is almost zero. Anyone gets lost, hone into my suit's telemetry. You ready?
Ready!
So if you had to choose one word to describe the sound of The Martian, what would it be?
I would say realistic.
Commander, we're at 10 degrees and the map is going to tip at 12.3.
And since we're radio people, sound just might be our favorite category of all. But seriously, take a second to listen more to the scene we've been playing. It's from the opening of The Martian.
Use the gable for the curve past the skyline! Anchor it with the rover!
Lots of layers of sound.
Absolutely.
What are you hearing?
First of all, you have the Foley work, which happens in the editorial process, where every footstep, every touch of something, if someone stands up, sits down, they belt in, all that happened on a stage with Foley artists watching that happen. So you have that layer, which provides a really organic sort of sense of what's going on. You have the environmental layer, which is a lot of ambient and background work of the wind and things like that. You have the electronics layer. They're in a spacecraft, and the one perspective being that.
Warning. Suit breach detected.
The suit environment.
Johansson, where'd you have
him? He's offline. I don't know where he is.
What are the vitals on his suit?
He's offline.
Negative.
He's
complete
offline.
Loss of signal on Watney.
Bitch!
Yeah. There's perspectivization that happens, whether you're hearing someone over the radio, whether you're hearing them from their perspective inside the helmet, so it gets reflected off, like, the glass of the helmet.
Walk west. He may be prone. We don't want to step over him.
Each one of those sounds that you described, I mean, it's created, right?
Yes.
And usually, I mean, I guess in this day and age, they're created specifically for that scene and that movie. People don't usually go to a sound bank or that kind of thing?
Well, you know, it depends on what part of the job. Like I said, the Foley people, Foley artists, they're looking at what's going on. For example, you know, somebody grabs one of the other astronauts and pulls them, and their suit sort of tightens a little bit. They're going to find like a jacket or some canvas or something. They're really kind of looking at it and using a thesaurus of sound in their head to figure out, like, okay, what do I have? I have a leather jacket and a canvas. I can wrap those together with a belt, and that feels a little bit like that.
Well, let's listen to another moment from the film. This is actually from the end of the film where Matt Damon straps into the escape capsule. So let's listen.
I'm anxious to get up to you. Thanks for coming back for me.
Well, we're on it. Remember, you'll be pulling some serious G's, so it's okay to pass out.
You're in Martinez's hands now.
Well, tell that no barrel rolls.
Copy that, Mav. Pilot.
Go.
I wanted to play this moment from the film because there's a lot of dialogue in there. We're hearing a lot of the actors' voices. But in this day and age, it's not necessarily their actual dialogue that they uttered when they shot the scene, right?
Correct. There's a process called ADR, Automated Dialogue Replacement, where the actor goes into a studio, usually a large, acoustically sort of neutral room, and they watch big screen of themselves, and line by line, they re-record.
Evade the airlock. Get in, prep for launch.
What about you, Commander?
I'm going to search a little longer. Get moving.
So they're literally doing voiceover for themselves.
Yeah, they're replacing it. And it's because you're, you know, a lot of times, even on a green screen set, there might be mechanisms moving, things that are noisy, the acoustics of whatever environment. You know, if you're out in the street, if you're out in the forest, I mean, some films, especially, you know, something that's a period piece, if there's planes going over or motor sounds in 1850, that didn't happen. So we do the ADR part to sort of get the best sounding dialogue we can. And then it gives the dialogue editor the ability to cut back and forth between what was on set, which might, there's some of the stuff that gets caught on set can be really good. Some of it not so much, and we use that as a guide to replace.
So what fascinates me about sound and sound editing and sound design in modern day films is that it has such depth and texture, right? And every moment of a movie that you hear is someone thought about, like, what should be the sound in the foreground? What should be the sound in the background? What should, you know, what should be over here on the right that's making, you know, a particular noise that's important to the story? Who do you work with to make all those decisions?
Well, you know, starting from the bottom, you have, for example, just something as simple as a sound effect for, you know, when we hear some of the rattling that's happening as the engine ignites, you hear the beginnings of the rattlings of the spacecraft.
Commander! On my way!
Sound effects editor may look around and try to find something that fits that in the library. There's a sound designer whose job is to create what doesn't exist. You know, you can't go to NASA and record a rattling spacecraft, but you can kind of get an idea of what it should sound like. So a sound designer might take a bunch of kitchen implements and metal ductwork or something from a construction site, put that in a room and kind of rattle it to get the sound. You know, it's a whole team, plus the dialogue editor, the Foley people, the sound effects archive is somebody who's just keeping track of what everything should sound like. If you do multiple films like Lord of the Rings, the way certain things sound at the beginning have to sound, Gandalf's staff shining has to sound the same in the third movie as it does in the first. It's great with computers and databases, but it's existed like that for 70 or 80 years since there's been sound in film.
You know, what's so interesting is the popular focus regarding how technology is changing films has been on the visual effects, you know, that we've seen that are totally part of modern day film. But when you think about, like, the crafting of the movie experience, sound has been, people have been working with sound way more than they've been futzing with the visual effects.
You know, and the movie Terminator 2. Is a landmark for visual effects because there's a scene where Robert Patrick plays the liquid metal Terminator T-1000.
Yeah.
He walks through a set of bars in the psychiatric hospital.
And he oozes through them.
Yes,
yeah.
And to get the sound of that, to him moving through those bars, the sound designer, a guy named Gary Reichstrom, did a can of dog food, opened on one end, inverted, and then it slides out and you hear this sucking sound. Coupled with moving yogurt, like a pile of yogurt, which, you know, that's what a sound designer does. Like, there's no liquid metal creatures out there we can go and record. So he thinks about what it should sound like, tries some things, and does that.
Go!
Here's $1 million visual effect, and here's a 79-cent can of dog food that created the sound for it. And that's kind of magic in my mind.
Yeah. So how important, in your mind, is the sound editing and mixing and design of a film to telling the story?
Well, you know, the most important parts are obviously the dialogue, the location sound, the people that capture the dialogue on set, because dialogue drives everything. Sound effects and Foley and sound design flesh out the world. Backgrounds do as well. And then I feel like music probably, if you have just dialogue and music at least, you've got the emotion there. But when you want to make a sense of realism, like you would have in The Martian, you've got to have all those other little pieces. So it's a question almost like sound brings things in focus. As you focus in, you hear the background layer. You hear the traffic sounds on Calm Ave through a window. You hear, you know, somebody in the other room cooking and stirring something. You hear the TV on, you know, all those little things. Somebody gets up from a couch. You hear the leather creak a little bit. Those add that focus.
It puts you there.
Exactly.
Yeah. As close as we'll ever get, most of us, to actually being on Mars.
Yep.
So last question, Brian. Do you think The Martian has a shot?
Absolutely. If I had to put money on it, I'd probably hedge my bet and probably go between The Martian and The Revenant.
Well, Brian McKeever is a senior audio post-production mixer and sound designer at Soundtrack Boston. Thank you so much for speaking with us. It was a real pleasure.
It was my pleasure as well. Thank you.
My God, Commander Lewis, couldn't you have packed anything from this century?
And hooray for sound.
Exactly.
No, I'm not. I'm not going to turn the beat around. I refuse to.
Hey, if I were stuck on Mars and all I had was disco, I too would refuse to turn it upside down. Matt Damon, you got it right. Tomorrow, the final part of our Oscar on Mars series, real astronauts will give us the straight truth about science and the Martian. For links to earlier parts of our series, go to our website, radioboston.org. Radio Boston is produced by Imogene Weinstein, Kathleen McNerney, and Jamie Bologna. We had help today from Virginia Marshall. Tim Skog is our disco master. Can I call you that today, Tim? Yes, I got a thumbs up. He's also our technical director. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.